This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2018, held at Faith Builders on July 31 to August 3.
Good morning again. Our thesis for this morning, as in all positions of authority in the kingdom of God, or any position in the kingdom of God, we are called to serve. And teachers are expected to expend themselves, to use up yourself in service to your students. In the Bible, we have this little story that Jesus shared with his disciples, and he shared this in relation to them growing their faith, but in Luke 17, starting in verse 7, he tells this story. But which of you, having a servant plowing or feeding cattle, will say unto him by and by, when he is come in from the field, go and sit down to meat? And will not rather say unto him, make ready wherewithal I may sup, and gird thyself, and serve me till I have eaten and drunken, and afterward thou shalt eat and drink? Doth he thank the servant because he did the things which were commanded him? I trow not. So likewise ye, when ye shall have done all those things which are commanded of you, say, we are unprofitable servants. We have done that which was our duty to do. And that may not sound overly encouraging in its aspect of what it has to say there, but that is a call to serve. That is a call to expend ourselves in this job of teaching. You have a quote at the top of your page there on that handout. And I only put part of it up there. We have this here. While it may be unjust to expect uncompensated work from everyone, teachers accept the responsibility of extra work when they take up their calling. The rest of it goes like this. The grateful acceptance of necessary tedium is one of the marks of great teaching. For it is really a gift of time without which no student can learn. Giving of ourselves in ways that are not necessarily always pleasant. That comes from the book, The Elements of Teaching. I want to go back to 2 Timothy again. Chapter 2, again, verses we read the other day, just two verses, 24 and 25. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth. So here we have again the servant of God, the teacher is doing everything within his power to assure that they are fulfilling their responsibility to instruct, to give correction, to bring these people into the knowledge of God. As we think of service, something I just thought of recently is that every act of service really has two people that receive from this act of service. There is the person that is served to, and then there is the person that is served for. Think about it this way. You go to a restaurant and there is a waiter or waitress there to serve you. But she serves to the customer and she serves for her employer. She is a representative of her employer to you. That's what she is. And so as she serves here, she is representing the interest of her boss to the customer. And he then indicates to her how she is supposed to serve. Because he cannot do all of this work. So he is giving her the job of doing this. And he determines when she works. He determines how she will dress as she works. He determines the way in which she serves, depending on what sort of restaurant you go to. If you go to a fast food restaurant or if you go to a traditional restaurant, you will be served differently in those places. And her job is to make both the customer and her boss satisfied with her job of serving. If you are dissatisfied with the service you receive, what do you do? Do you complain to the waiter that came to your table? You may, but you ultimately go and you complain to the manager, who is your direct access to her authority. Okay? Because her inability to serve you reflects on her employer. So she must represent her employer in that. So she is serving up to her boss and serving down to her customer. She is serving two people. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. So he is serving as a soldier in a way that is pleasing to his to the person that has hired him. What will get in the way of your serving your classroom and so on? Your authority has direct control and responsibility of the way that you serve in your classroom. We talked about that the other day. And remember, as you stand in your classroom, we said, in authority, you are standing here in the place of others. Ultimately, you are standing here in the place of Christ represented before your students. But you also represent these other people. These people that give you authority, you are serving for them. So they gave you authority to teach. You are serving for them. You are representing their interest to these students. So they have expectations that they put on you as you serve. So let's think of these people that gave us authority. What are the expectations that they put on us? The church is looking for the expectation of young people that are prepared to take their place in God's kingdom. They are looking for a school that is providing support and example for the standards, the beliefs, the practices that they said, these are what we hold valuable. This is who we are as a church. They're looking for the school to support that. And the school should model that better than anything else. The school should be able to model the doctrine and the practices of the church. The church, in a sense, is looking for what is the end result of this school? Is it producing young people that are ready to serve? Your school board has expectations for you. They have expectations that you will exhibit your authority in your classroom in order and respect, that you will uphold the school standards, that you will develop and build into the school culture and spirit that is there, that you will educate there as well. What is going to be taught, teach this curriculum, that you are a team player, you're working with everyone else there. And in their aspect, as they look at your work, is often they look at your classroom as a whole and say, how is this classroom progressing, learning, working, cooperating? They look at that as a whole. And then we have the parents and their expectation. And their expectation is the education of their child. They're looking for the emotional development of their child. They're looking for the maturity and the development of their child. They come into here with kind of a single focus of their child, as though their child is the only one in the classroom often. With good reason. That is their realm of authority and their realm of responsibility. So let's not discount that from them. Because whenever we look in Scripture, education of children and the development of children is so clearly given to the parents and not to others. And more specifically, it is given to fathers. Whenever it says teach, it says fathers teach primarily. And so a parent's interest in their child's education has actually more to do with the success of that child than any of the other influences on their lives, I believe. What is the parent's attitude about school? And I think these things contribute. This is a little aside to us serving, but I want us to understand this. That a parent, the way the parent feels about this, about you and about the school and about what their child should learn, has more to do with that child's, what they accomplish at school, than their ability, than the teachers they have, than the school they're in, than the friends they have. The parents are going to control that, because you cannot take away the responsibility and authority that God has given to parents to do this. Parents are forming these attitudes and these ideas in their children's minds. And you cannot and should not try to get in the way of that. We had a man come to, one of our ministers came to our high school one morning to share in devotions. And he said, "I want to share my testimony with you this morning." Sitting right there and right there and right there. And he indicated his children that were sitting there. He's saying that, those three students, that is my testimony. They are living proof of what I believe and what I hold is important. And whether or not a parent may realize it or not, that is true. Their children are a testimony of who they are. Now, bringing this back to us, as we think about this and the parent's responsibility, we need to be careful that we do not become possessive of these students and call them ours, because they are under the authority of their parents. Make sure we never come between the child and his authority, especially the child and his parent. That is not where we belong. That is out of line with where we need to be. If the parent is that much in wrong, then you need to refer that problem elsewhere. Don't get in the way of that. That needs to move up that chain of command until the church, the ministry, whatever it is that has authority over that family can speak into that situation. You do not belong there. It is not a safe place to be. What do we serve to? This is our primary focus when we think of serving. This is who we're serving to. We're serving to the student. This is our visible point of service. And as we think of teaching, the elements of teaching, the book referring to what is the most important thing that a teacher needs to be thinking about, the student's best in education is where the teacher needs to focus. What is the student's best in this? And that's not left on just you. That is a combination of these other people, the church, the school, the home, all these things working together to determine what is the student's best. But we need to strive for what that is. And so as we think of teaching a class, we think of our lesson planning, our preparation, that's part of our service. Our preparation for this class. How well did I prepare? Do I understand this lesson? I cannot convey to others what I do not understand myself. And remember, we always tend to convey this lesson at a little lower level than we may comprehend it ourselves. All right? So I understand how this works, but do I understand it well enough that I can convey it well enough that they can grasp this information? So keep that in mind. I cannot convey what I do not understand. Have I covered the points that are important? Have I do I know what's going to be a problem today? This lesson, this particular problem in this subject is going to be a problem today. Have I taken time to figure out what those are? And some of those things come with just teaching it once, and we say, oh, this is a problem, and we remember that next time. As we think of coming and being in service, what are you excited about today? Why are you happy to come to school today, on this day? All of those things are part of our preparation for service in school. And when we think of doing our teaching a class, trying to convey information and so on to these students. How can we bring them into the lesson and help them to understand what the lesson is? How can we involve them in what is going on today in the lesson? So we can use a demonstration. We can get them out of their seats and use them as a prop to do something. We can get them to visualize things. Do you know what a parallax is? Who knows what a parallax is? Okay, good. Let's learn about a parallax. I need a volunteer, somebody to come up here and be able to stand up here and go like this. Who can do that for me, please? Who would like to volunteer today? Before I have to call on somebody. Just have to stand up here. Thank you. Come on up here. All right. So what we're going to do, a parallax is where we, they use it when they look at stars, and they use it to understand how far away the stars are, and it is, a parallax is the apparent change in position of an object based on the actual change in position of the observer. Okay? And so as you hold your hands up like this, and you look through them, okay? Now, pick someone out there and look at them through your hands and close one eye. Alright? Now open that eye and look at them through the other eye without moving your hands. Okay? Now, did the person appear to move? Okay, the person appeared to move. Did the person actually move? No, they didn't. Okay, and our hands didn't move and the person didn't move. But what changed was our observation point, right? From one side of the face to the other. Okay? And so we can take that and we can judge the angle that is different from that, and we can determine through complex mathematics how far away that person is from you. Okay? Thank you very much. Okay? But we took someone out of their seat. It put someone else up front here for you to look at, and they were doing things, and now we all can go like this, and you all can look at me or something else up here, and do that exact same thing, and we can learn about how that works, okay? That's one small way that we can do that, okay? Anything that gets them to move around and take part in that lesson helps them to learn and understand these things better. That was very simple. That did not require me to bring lots of props to class. I just had to find a volunteer. And there's plenty of you to pick from. So it did not have to be extreme or extra special. What are things that you can bring from your experiences that you can bring to class to illustrate this lesson? What is something you can bring from your students' experience that they can bring? You talked about visiting a certain state. You were talking about geography of a certain state. How many students have been to this state? What did you do there? Why did you go? What do you remember from being there? Look outside of your textbook. Take a trip to your local public library and see how many books that they have that go right along with what you're teaching in your textbook, whether it is geography, different countries you are studying, or other interesting things in science that you are looking at. Your public library has all kinds of books that are there, and they would just love you to have you come and pick up and take back to your classroom. And they don't have to be right directly related to what you're learning, but when they are related in a way, the students will pick them up. Their own curiosity will help them do that. You can serve them in that way. Now, a word or a phrase that I've heard already this week, and we need to understand, is sustainable best. Okay? I use this little illustration because it's not an extreme illustration. Okay, we do not have to go overboard with always bringing these things to class. That is not necessary. It's actually not even good. Because we're not here to entertain. We're here to instruct. And so when I ask a student to come forward and we want to illustrate this little exercise, I didn't do that to entertain you, but I wanted you to understand how this works, what this actually is. So I'm trying to convey a thought and not just make you pay attention, though it helps with that. But when I do that all the time, then you just want me to bring something else to class for you to look at instead of just thinking about what we're doing here. But when we do those things, then we can bring those things back and we can do them again and we can do them again. I have a certain number of videos that I use in my science class. I don't use them every year. We don't do them every day, but they come back again, and then they come back again. And I don't have to find them every time because I know what I'm going to use. So we can build on that. I like to play with dry ice. There's plenty of safe things to do with dry ice. There's some unsafe things too, but we just stick with the safe things and we have all kinds of fun whenever we come to that. That's one thing we can do with that. And so as you look around and you see these people that have taught for 30 years or however long, those people are not people that are there to intimidate you. They're to inspire you with the way that they can lead a class, and they bring all these things with them and they just know what illustration to use because they've had that experience to do that. The other thing I want to think about as we serve our classes is checking lessons. Checking lessons, grading work, is a point of service to our classes. And the reason why it is a service to us is because it helps us to understand how well I am conveying what I am teaching. We check this lesson. Nobody got it. Obviously, I did not convey this well enough. They did. We're not able to grasp this information. It also helps me to pick out who the struggling student is quite easily when they consistently are struggling to understand this. So that's a reason to grade this. I can evaluate the level of effort someone is putting into their work through this. It also shows the students that I value their work. This is one of the main things why I like to do grading. And even if I don't put a grade on it, you put a check mark on it, they know you looked at it. It puts value on their work. I'm going to give you this assignment. I'm not going to look at it. I don't care what you do on it, but I want you to do this assignment. Well, then, if I'm not going to look at it, if I'm not going to evaluate it, why should they do it? But when I can look at it and I can say, this is fine, that's good, thank you for doing this work, it puts value on their work. So those are some things to do then. However, grading is to be an evaluation tool. It is not a dungeon. Okay? Nobody learns anything by having you grade their paper. Did you realize that? When you grade a paper, it has nothing to do with how much that student learned on that lesson. They will not learn more if you grade it or if you don't grade that paper. What they learned, they've learned. So we cannot be controlled by this sometimes mountain of grading that is around us. Sometimes we need to just check it off that it was done and move along. And we need to make sure that this mountain of grading does not get in the way of my preparation for tomorrow. Because if I don't prepare well for tomorrow, then I will not be able to convey the lesson well, and I'll have just wasted this whole day in class because I did not prepare well to teach my lessons. So our preparation is always more important than that evaluation work. That evaluation work is necessary. I do not mean to just toss it out and say, well, don't grade your work. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, remember what it is for and use it for what it is for. Now, what about those students that just don't get it? We're here to serve, okay? So the struggling student, the student that has to work harder to understand is really what we're here for, okay? I am not in favor of putting a label on children. This child struggles because of this problem, this disorder, or this reason. I am not okay with that. And I'm not going to throw those things out just across the board. They do not exist. But I want to say that those things have to be exceptions, not the rule. These things are mainly a humanistic understanding of our fallen world. That is mainly where they come from. It is psychology trying to understand why children don't want to behave and why their parents can't teach them anything while leaving God out of the question. In general, here are some ideas to help us understand some of the struggles that students have. And there are some types of physical problems that children can have that are not related to some of these other labels that often get put on children, or we just quickly medicate for them. I had a student that was a top of my class sort of a student, did very well, and all of a sudden started to struggle immensely in homework. And it took her hours to read these things and so on, and was getting very frustrated. The problem was she needed glasses. And I know that sounded really strange, but it changed that child when she got her glasses. She went right back to getting her work done. So sometimes that can make an effect. We have a student that will be going into 10th grade this year. She has consistently scored on her achievement tests every year at a second or third grade level. She's not expected to achieve a whole lot of anything. Okay? She is incapable of it. She's a nice girl. She's a little special, but she is friendly, and she gets along well with her classmates. She's at school for the social aspect of it, but she does not have, she's an extreme example of someone who cannot learn. I also have a student that will be in seventh grade this year who has always just struggled. She's always graded out about a year behind where she should have been. She has seemingly socially and academically developed slowly. And so we are making some concessions and changes, and she has extra tutoring that she's been doing for a few years to help work with this. Okay? But some other things that why students can struggle. And these things cause them to have failing grades, maybe. They struggle in various subjects. They can be inattentive and hyper and socially awkward and distracted and just downright have behavior problems. Sometimes they've had bad school experiences. Maybe you have a student that came in, maybe they were in a bad homeschool situation, or they've moved from another school that gave them poor instruction. Student coming into third grade this year, first year in our school, she does not know any math facts. It just was not taught and conveyed to her in the school where she was at before. You know, so maybe it was just a problem of poor teachers before can cause these problems. Often it's a problem at home as well, can cause some of these problems. We see in the first few grades where maybe there was not early development or involvement before school to try to prepare them for school. Coloring, reading, playing, singing, some of these things here. Maybe in that family, the education comes behind the business or the farm. Often we hear about these students, he's good with his hands. He just doesn't do real well in school. Okay, maybe so, but have we placed the necessary emphasis on the value of these other things as well? Maybe school is a necessary evil, and so we just put up with it. And our student is just lazy, and he just kind of gets along. We had a student recently, I think one of the most brilliant and talented students we've had in our school in a while. Well, maybe that's going a little bit extreme there. He's a very talented young man. He scraped by the skin of his teeth to get a diploma this year. But he has all kinds of ability that he is pursuing outside of school and was pursuing while he was in school and so on. So these are some things that can do this. We can also have conflict with teachers. If you are in contention with his parents or with him, this child, that can hinder this child to learn. the younger the child, the more it's going to hinder that. Now, let's remember what John Koblenz said the very first day. It's very easy for us to say, this is the most important thing. And because we teach school, we like to say school is the most important thing. Okay? So let's remember where we are at in our authority structure, and that we are trying to keep our authorities in line. And if this home does not value education as much as the other home does, have we reconciled that with the rest of our authorities and done what we could appropriately to deal with that, and we're not trying to grasp an authority that is not ours to try to conform the family when that is not our calling? One of the other things that is disturbing to me and is a struggle to us is just these families that are dysfunctional in our churches, leaving them with the inability to prepare assignments, complete homework. That is another big reason we have these children. Homes that have not just taught discipline to their children, have not given them the tools they need to live in society. So understanding these things does not change any of these problems. It does help us gain a little bit of understanding of why they are this way, give us perspective on how to move forward with some of these things. Is the child just being lazy? Well, are they lazy? Why? Because they don't care or because they can't and don't know how? Does the child not know how? Then can I be a servant and take some time to try to explain again and again why we're doing this, how this lesson worked, why we want to do it this way? You need to remember this. These are the steps. Have I taken the time to do that? And when that continues, then maybe we need to introduce a tutor to this situation, someone who can give more specialized help to this student. Maybe we need to reduce the amount of work to this student because they are incapable of performing all of these things that most of our students can. If we want to have success in these areas, though, we usually have to have the support of the parents of this child, because they are most influential in this child's life. Okay, so we need to try to bring the family on board with the help of your principal and the school board, to bring them on board of this is how we want to serve this child, this is how we want to help this child to learn. But we cannot just claim that we are a failure in teaching this child when we cannot bring all of those things together. Just because you did not reach the success level you wanted does not mean you have not served. One of the other ways I think it's very important, and we talked about this just a little bit yesterday, one of the vital ways that we need to serve our students is in confidentiality. You are going to learn all kinds of unpleasant things about the students in your room, about the family they've come from. You're going to learn about the type of food they eat and they don't eat, and how terrible it is, and the habits they have at home, and the lack of structure they have at home, and the type of treatment they get from their siblings or their parents, or the movies they watch at home, or the times they, whatever. You are going to learn all kinds of unpleasant things about this family. Some of them. Are you protecting them? Are you shielding them from some of the other students in your classroom that they need to be given a little bit of bumper space and protection from, so that the other students are not using the these things against them? Are you protecting them from you? Because you know all this stuff. And then you leave school and you relate to all these other adults that are also peers of their parents. And what do you do with all this that you know about this family? So this family comes up in conversation, and that the parents did such and such, or the child did such and such over here. And you have all kinds of interesting comments to make because you know several more things about this family from working with them at school. And you just fill in the blanks. You know, it's not really that way. No, it's actually more like this. And you fill in the blank with what you know. I didn't say it wasn't wrong, that what you said was incorrect, but are you protecting these people? See, because everyone agrees, and we hear over and over, that knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. People will want to befriend you because they know you know. But it is not your knowledge. It is not your secret. It is not your story. It's not your right to tell. You need meekness to be able to listen to that story and not respond to it. You do not have to correct that story. You must listen to it and leave the blanks blank. It's hard because we like to use our power of knowledge. But we do not have the right or the responsibility to correct the stories around us when we have other juicy information, or we just want to share it with somebody who just would love to hear this. Are you serving that family? Are you serving that student? Are you really serving the church? I want to think a little bit of evaluation. This is maybe not so much in serving our classroom's teacher, but just a little bit of evaluation here, because evaluation is vital. When we know where we're going, we then need to be able to stop somewhere along the way and say, am I getting to where I want to be? So who is going to evaluate you? Your principal will evaluate you, your school board will evaluate, the parents will evaluate you, and of course the students will evaluate you. All of those things. So as we get this, as they evaluate, and as I evaluate, and I hear back from this, and I hear criticism back from how I was in class, listen to that criticism and then evaluate it. Does it have merit? Where did it come from? I told the story of the student who went home and told her parents that I was unfairly targeting one young man. I also knew that was the young man that she had particularly high affections for at that point in time. Okay? That helps to... But I needed to listen to that. I needed to evaluate whether or not she was correct in her observation. I needed to listen to that, and I needed to evaluate where that came from. In the same way, you need to listen to the praise that you hear and the people that will commend you for your hard work. It is wonderful what you're doing for our community. Listen to that. Take the good in that, but evaluate where that came from. Do they even know what they're talking about? Do they have any idea what sort of a teacher you are? Okay? They can appreciate that you are there filling this role. Okay? That's good. And you can appreciate that, and you can take that as encouragement. But remember to evaluate it, and does it have merit? Evaluate yourself. Have you lived up to your goals that you set for yourself for this classroom? Are you working toward achieving those goals, maybe we should say? Talk with other teachers in your school. This is what I did today. These are the problems I had. These were the great things we had today. But talk with the teachers in your school. Hear from them. Evaluate yourselves. Have a high standard for yourself. I want us to think back again as we think of serving our class. Are we cowboys or are we shepherds? So as we were thinking of this, as we are shepherds, remember that as the shepherd leads his sheep, that the sheep do not get to pick the destination. The sheep do not always get what they want. Sometimes the sheep are corrected. But the shepherd has a plan for that flock. The shepherd knows where they are going. The shepherd makes sure that the sheep get what they need. Because the shepherd understands that it is not about the shepherd, it is all about the sheep. I'm going to leave you with a couple verses from Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 to 28. And Jesus called them and said unto him, "Ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to expend his life as a ransom for many."
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.